Good Monday morning to you, and welcome to Jump in Tucson. I'm your host, Dr. Ed Ackerley, and our producer is Matt Neely. Thanks, Matt, for all you do for Jump in Tucson. Coming up tomorrow, Tuesday, General Ted Maxwell will be the host. On Wednesday, Grant Kruger, and on Thursday, Tom Moulton. And then I'll return Friday with the business success stories. You know, last Friday, we gave away some tickets to the Tucson, Arizona Boys Chorus concert. It was great to see some, as we refer to as Wakeys, to come to the event, both at 7:30 on Saturday and 3 o'clock on Sunday. So thank you, folks, that are supporting the Tucson, Arizona Boys Chorus. Our wonder theme for Mondays is to celebrate the good things, good people, good research, good faculty, staff, and students, all the good things that are going on at the University of Arizona. I was just talking with Vice President of the University, Pam Scott, who's in charge of communication, talking about how wonderful many things are. I actually happened to see President Robbins on Thursday as well, and talked to him about the show. And it's my own personal opinion, having worked there for 33 years as a faculty member at the University of Arizona. There is a lot of fantastic things going on. Yeah, we hear about some of the negative stuff from time to time, because that's what people, I guess, want to hear about. But this show is intended to talk about the good things that are going on at the University of Arizona. As Bob Lush once told me, if the population was put up against the other cities in Arizona, it's about the fifth or sixth largest of city in Arizona as an entity, the University of Arizona. And the Wonder Program is sponsored in part by Michael Kasher of Halualoa Companies. We thank him for his support. With me in studio today, of course, is my brother Bill, but also Roman Campuzano, who is a good friend of ours. And good morning, Roman.
Good morning.
It's great to have you here on a Monday. Our first guest today is Sheila Kressler Crowley. Good morning, Sheila. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, you are the Associate Director of the Terry J. Lundgren Center for Retailing out of CALS, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences at the University of Arizona. And we're going to talk after the break a little bit about the great event that we had last Thursday. But let's talk first, Sheila, about your journey. And, you know, we were talking last Thursday about your broadcast career, the 20 years doing that, and then we'll talk a little bit about how you got into the University of Arizona and Cal. So talk us a little bit about your journey and how you came to Tucson and how you are landed where you are.
Well, great. Thank you so much. I'm actually born and raised in Tucson. I'm one of those. Born at UNC.
And Roman, too. Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, my husband as well. So I kind of feel like we're an oddity these days as Tucson expands. But born and raised in Tucson, left for a while and lived in Los Angeles post-college, went to the University of Arizona. And my broadcasting started in college, actually. Way back in the day, I started as the producer for what was called the Bobby and Brad Show on 94.9 Mix FM.
Amazing.
I was a
Brad Behan, my good buddy Brad. Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah. Small radio world, small Tucson world. And that was really my first introduction to broadcasting. Bobby Rich wouldn't let me talk until I could run the board with my eyes closed, and also knew how to use a backup reel-to-reel system and carts. So this is like ancient history radio.
Yeah, I'm looking right across the hallway at the Drive, which is the radio station that Bobby and a couple of Fletcher and Jim and some other people started, and they, about a year and a half ago, sold it to the Bustos Media Company. So I'm looking at Bobby's station right across the hallway from me here. So,
yeah, Bobby gave me my first break, and so I started off producing, and then, you know, worked my way up, did weekends and then nights, and then ultimately transitioned to a station that's no longer there. 104.1 The Point is what it was called, and I did middays there for about 4 years. And you know how it worked in radio back then, you're on air until you're not. And so fired multiple times during station transitions and switching, but then always hired back. So I went from scripts, from Journal to Scripps to iHeart to back to Scripps to back to iHeart, and So I did that for a long time, and really that came to an end in about 2019, right as COVID was hitting and iHeart did a huge layoff. And
lesson there, never burn a bridge, right? Never burn a bridge.
Absolutely. Yeah. Never burn a bridge.
You're so fired, you're rehired.
Yeah.
Well, and most industries are small, and you know, sometimes in radio, you're fired not because you didn't show up on time or did a good job. It's just a new station, and they want new talent, and that's just the business. And so after about my probably fourth station switch, I looked into getting more of what I called the real job. And radio was always the fun job. And I became a community relations coordinator for Bookman's Entertainment Exchange. I'm assuming a lot of people know about Bookman's. They've been around for 45 plus years in Arizona. And then transitioned into their marketing director role, where I served in that role for about 13 years. And open stores, closed stores, had an amazing time, worked directly with the owner, Bob Schlesinger. And then about 5 years ago, I was just about ready to make a career change and try something new. Also had children in high school and was looking at that very lovely benefit of qualified tuition reduction that the University of Arizona extends employees.
Amen.
So I made a family decision and applied and was accepted as the associate director at the Terry J. Lundgren Center for Retailing. And the irony in that was I used to attend the Global Retailing Ideas Summit as a marketing director. And if you had asked me, you know, 3 years or I would say 6 years ago, hey, you ever think you'll be running the center? I probably would have looked at you, we're crazy. And so you just never know where life's going to lead you, what relationships will open doors. And here I am today. Currently, I'm currently in the interim director role as we made some changes this last summer. So I've been sitting in that interim role as director for July will be a year. And it's been a whole new learning experience. And as a lifelong learner, I love it. And I love working at the University of Arizona. I went back to school 2 years ago and got my master's. Through Eller, and it's just been a great journey in learning more things myself, but also showing my children that, you know, you're never too old to keep learning and trying new things. And so that's really been kind of in a nutshell, and for the sake of radio time, my career journey.
Fantastic. Well, we're going to take a quick break here and go visit some sponsors. But when we come back, we want to talk about the Terry J. Lundgren Center for Retailing, your position there as interim director. And then I want to talk about this great event we had on Thursday, the Women of the C-Suite, and Michelle Buck, the CEO of Hershey Company. We'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI 1030 AM. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is Dr. Ed Ackerley with me. Co-hosting today is Roman Campuzano. Good morning, Roman.
Good morning.
On these Mondays, we do Wonder at the University of Arizona and talk about cool and great things that are happening at the University of Arizona. And one of those cool things is something that happened this past Thursday at the Terry J. Lundgren Center for Retailing, the Women of the C-Suite. And the interim director of that wonderful facility is Sheila Kressler Crowley. And welcome back, Sheila.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
So I was fortunate to experience the Terry J. Lundgren Center for Retailing. Of course, there's a collaboration with the Eller College in the marketing department where I am housed. And then, of course, it's centered over in CALS, the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. So tell us a little bit about the metamorphosis of the Terry J. Lundgren, who he is and why he's important and why he's important to the University of Arizona.
Absolutely, would love to. Well, Terry J. Lundgren is the former chairman of the board and CEO of Macy's, Inc. He's going on about, I think, 6 years of being retired. But as he mentioned on Thursday, that has not slowed him down. He is continuing to work and share his insight and time, talent, treasure with the University of Arizona. Terry has been instrumental in the center really, really from the beginning. You know, the center has been around since 1993. It really operates as a professional development, career-focused center that serves originally the retail and consumer science majors within the Norton School of Human Ecology, but also across campus. You mentioned the collaboration with Eller. that's very important to the center. As we want to show students, as you enter the workforce, you're going to be collaborating with people from all walks of life, all various degrees and various things they bring to the table. So we try to teach students as early as freshmen some of those components around professional development and networking. And so Terry came into the fold, I believe, around 2005. Prior to that, Terry is an alumni of the University of Arizona. He actually started out in Kales. He'll tell the story if he wanted to be a veterinarian and then realized very quickly that it was time to pivot. And I believe ended up graduating from the business school over at Eller. So he has a connection to both programs that both are near and dear to his heart. And the center was named after Terry in 2005. And since then, he is so supportive and very engaging, mostly with our students, definitely on the university level. And I think that's what makes him especially unique as a contributor and a donor and just a lifelong supporter of our program, is that his favorite thing is to come back to campus and first and foremost engage with students. How can he bring his expertise and his advice to students? And on the flip side, he loves learning insights from our students, meeting them where they are, understanding some of the concerns they have as they enter the workforce or concerns around the industry at large. And so he's been just a wonderful mentor to myself, but to our students and to the program. So we're exceptionally grateful for both Terry and his wife, Tina Lundgren. Mm-hmm. Most recently, they gave a significant gift to the Norton School of Human Ecology, as well as the center and Eller as part of that collaboration, where we are so excited, not just about the collaboration part, but what it's going to mean for students. And part of that gift was creating the Lundgren Consumer Science Lab, which will be housed in our building over at Norton, but it'll be open to all students. So if there are students in Eller Marketing, for example, who were interested in utilizing our influencer studio and some of the technology and equipment, we'll have that, or our VR simulation area where you can put on the MetaQuest headsets and be in these virtual environments studying consumer behavior. Those are some of our goals for the launch of that lab. And that couldn't have happened without Terry and Tina Lundgren's generous gift. So they play an important role, not just at Norton and at Eller, but I would say the university at large. He's dedicated to higher ed and to our students.
Yeah, he's a wonderful, wonderful guy. It was great talking with him Thursday. I did want to mention, Roman Camposano's here with us, and we're on the Rito Park Foundation board, and CALS, the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, of course, Rito Park, we do horse racing there.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us, Roman, just briefly about the internship program that we have with CALS.
The internship program, as I understand it, is has been going for how many years now?
Maybe 20, yeah.
20 years old.
And even longer if you go back to Bob Baffert and Bill Baffert back when they were young boys. So,
well, it's a tremendous, what I do know about it is that it's a tremendous program, and that so many students have gone on to do better things within the industry. Horse racing is a really, and besides lucrative, it's a community building,
cultural
event. Yeah. Yes, that is nationwide, and in a lot of cases worldwide. But these students, they go on, and they're one of the students had what was the announcer for the Kentucky Derby,
right?
Either this last year or the year
that's
before.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean that's just one of the tons of stories that are out there.
I bring this up because the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, someone might question, why is the Terry J. Lundgren Center for Retailing over in the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences with Dean Burgess, and how does that all fit in? But as the state or the largest land grant university in the Western Hemisphere, and the dominance that, of course, starting out with agriculture, but the life sciences part of the CALS is really important. And so just speak a little bit to why the center is over in CALS and why retailing is over in the CALS College.
Yeah, that's always kind of a head scratcher. It actually was for me when I first got there. And I'd be remiss because I feel like It's actually Kale's marketing. If they hear this, they're going to yell at me for not saying it's Kale's now. We've just went through another name change, which I get wrong all the time.
Right.
So we've gone from Cal's to Kale's.
Kale's, right, yeah.
Don't ask me what that acronym is. So there's so many. I'm still learning them 5 years in.
Yeah.
But from my understanding, back in the day, the retail and consumer science major was home economics. And so home economics, along with personal family wealth management, along with family studies and human development, and our most recent major of fashion, industry, and technology is all housed under Norton, which is all housed under Kale. And I think a great way to look at it as, you know, it's touching all points of the human experience, if you will, how it affects the family. So from consumer behavior to finance to human development to agriculture to environmental sciences, they all have a connecting touch point. As a marketing professional, you know, you wish you had a very one line answer, because when you have to start explaining something in that depth, like,
right.
You know, it's like it's the opposite of what you want to do in marketing. But I think that's just kind of academics in general, especially higher ed, where you have all these amazing programs and
right.
They got to sit under something. And so that's how we came to be.
It's called the College of Agricultural Life and Environmental Sciences. Now that's where comes from. So yeah.
Yes, I knew there was the E meant something in there. Like I said,
I just call it Cal's. So yeah.
Well, I still call Costco Price Club.
There
so,
you go.
There you go.
I love it. Let's talk a little bit about what happened last Thursday, which was the Women of the C-Suite and the Terry J. Lundgren Center for Retailing, a Distinguished Speaker Series. And you know, we'll say two things. One, we have you here, Sheila, who is a distinguished in your own right, but we had a wonderful CEO speaking
Michelle
to the students.
Back.
Yes, she's from the Hershey Company. To speak a little bit to that whole program of the Women of the C-Suite, and Terry was there, and it was amazing. Just talk a little bit about that activity.
Absolutely. Well, one of the things we like to do at the center is connect industry directly to students. And we have a wonderful participant in Terry Lundgren, who still has a very deep Rolodex of connections to CEOs and stays in contact with them. And how the Women of the C-Suite came about is, in our program specifically, Retail and Consumer Science, I'd say 95% of the people in that major are female. And typically in the retail industry, most of the people who are in the C-Suite are male. And so it's really important for us to give our female students especially an opportunity to see themselves and the possibilities of their careers in the future. And so having someone like Michelle Buck, who is the first female CEO of Hershey's to date in her 30 years experience, plus having her dedicate her time and talent to come to campus to speak to students, is just something that we can offer students that doesn't really happen, I think, on a consistent basis across campus or even at other universities. So this series is also kind of complements our Global Retailing Idea Summit, which we do once a year, pausing this year, but we'll bring it back next year, where, again, we bring industry to campus so that students can learn and get inspired about the possibilities of what they can do in retail and business. But on the flip side, we find that industry loves connecting with this generation and loves
right.
connecting with students. And so Women of the C-Suite is going to be ongoing. Michelle is definitely kicking it off for us. We'll regroup next week and decide, you know, who else are we going to bring to campus. And then, of course, open it up to all students. We want this to be, you know, equitable and accessible, not just to our LR and retail and consumer science students, but students in psychology and communications, or even students just trying to figure out, you know, where do they fit in?
Right. Well, thank you.
Helpful.
We really thank you for allowing the students from the Eller College to participate in that. It was fantastic. Sheila, you do great work at the Terry J. Lundgren Center for Retailing. We appreciate what you do for the students. The Women of the C-Suite series with Michelle Buck from the Hershey Company was fantastic. You do great work over there. Thank you for joining us on Jump
yes.
in Tucson today. We really appreciate it. And we'll be looking forward to the next event.
Thank you so much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Jump in Tucson, the Monday edition. This is Dr. Ed Ackerley. On Mondays, we talk about wonder at the University of Arizona. We talk about the good things that are going on in research and in development and in what the students are doing, what the faculty are doing in terms of their research and guiding these young people. It's a great celebration of all the wonderful things happening at the University of Arizona. And for our second segment here, we're talking with Dr. Jenkin Thenga, who is a Associate Professor of Aerospace and Mechanical Engineering. Good morning.
Good morning.
And welcome back to Roman Campuzano, who's with us, my co-host today.
Happy Monday.
Thank you. Thank you. Hey, tell us a little bit of the story of how you got to become interested in aerospace and mechanical engineering, and then how that led to you being at the University of Arizona. How'd that all happen?
Sure. Thank you for that opportunity. I think it started around age two. I was pretty much focused on interest in space. The toys that I were, you know, playing with were space related.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a sort of a natural connection that I had since then. It also helped that this was the tail end of the Apollo era.
Mm-hmm.
You would see some of those good times, you know, being recollected. But, you know, I would be, you know, under five. And then, of course, some of the, you know, great shows of space that are now, you know, very common started in that time frame. A little bit earlier, it was 2001 Space Odyssey. A little bit later, it was Star Wars. And then Battlestar Galactica.
Mm-hmm.
My personal favorite was Battlestar Galactica, just because it was in that same time frame. And so all of these factors helped me, you know, sort of be propelled towards interest in space. But where I was living at, it was nearly, you know, impossible to, you know, get into a space career. This was living in the other side of the world, particularly in places like Nigeria. Malaysia and Sri Lanka. And so my dad happens to be a civil engineer, and so we were moving around places almost one country every 3 years or so. And so very similar to, you know, a lot of military families moving mm-hmm. from place to place.
Speaking of which, on this Monday morning, we just heard a plane fly right over the top of the building, and as you were talking about space, along comes a big plane. But those military families move around, so you've moved around quite a bit.
Yeah. Quite a bit, and so moved overall to five or six different countries, and then our family chose to settle in Canada for about 20 years, at which point there were opportunities to, you know, actually get into a you know, space career. And Canada has invested heavily into the space robotics world. And so that was one of the few pathways to you know, get into that. And so I looked for a, you know, university degree that would get you into space, and there happened to be only one.
Right.
And so you, you know, in a sense, took that opportunity and... From there, had a very exciting opportunity to work with a space robotics company called MD Robotics, and it was actually incidentally a critical time for them, in which they were launching space robots into the ISS
mm-hmm.
back in the year 2000-2001, and so that gave me a sense of you know, purpose and you know, sort of more solidified interest. Of where I could go into, and that then eventually led into a master's degree, which never quite finished, and mm-hmm. I turned to a PhD, and I've been in a university setting ever since.
Yeah, it's interesting when you come to the University of Arizona, one of the little trivia things about NASA, which we're going to talk about after the break, is that every significant NASA program in space since its inception has involved the University of Arizona. There's always been somebody, or whether they run the mission like they did for Mars and even the OSIRIS-REx mission, but every single mission that Apollo, all of them, that NASA has done, the University of Arizona. And as a matter of fact, the University of Arizona mapped the backside of the moon as part of the process. So it's a good place to be. If you're interested in this kind of stuff, it's a good place to be, right?
Definitely. And University of Arizona has a outsized role as a space university ever since the beginning. And I think thanks to a lot of right investment at the right time, bringing in talented people, but also helping to grow talent here in Arizona. I think both factors are critical, and so that's quite a toast to see right. that achievement over those years, and now of course can we see that continue?
Right. I'm looking at Roman and thinking, Roman, you weren't alive when Neil Armstrong walked on the moon, were you?
I wasn't alive. However, I had two sets. Most of us have two sets of grandparents.
Right.
One had a very old encyclopedia set, and the other one had a continuously updated
right.
encyclopedia set. So I would dive through those things, man. I read all day. And one of the things that I really, for lack of a better word, nerd out to is exactly what you're talking about right now.
Yeah.
Landing on the moon, anything having to do with the stars. I've held a couple of star parties. I don't know if you know
right.
that or not.
But right.
It's really fascinating when it comes to what's out there.
Yeah, and it's amazing that being in Tucson with the great weather that we have, that most of the year the people at Kitt Peak and up on Mount Lemmon and the other places and Seward Observatory, all the different places that we can look through the beautiful skies in Tucson.
Very fortunate that way.
And our dark skies municipal regulations to keep the lights down a little bit. So you teach students. People ask me, what do I teach at the U of A? And my always response is students. And so you teach classes at the U of A. And what is your specialty there? What do you teach?
It's space systems design.
Mm-hmm.
And so through students, we actually explore mission opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
We put students at the front row, at the front seat, literally, to look at how we could explore all of the celestial bodies we haven't quite reached yet. There are many, and so students get to help devise mission plans and opportunities, some of which then get distilled over the years, get right. more refined, and then we then
nothing like applied learning, right?
Right.
Of actually doing something that might actually take fruition someday. And taking the idea from conception to reality is kind of a neat process, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, and trying to figure that out. We're going to talk about one of those great projects after the break. It'll be great to listen to that. So, what is your favorite thing about teaching? Why teaching as a career? I realize you're a researcher and an inventor, if you will, and like to do all that kind of stuff. But how about the teaching component? What's your favorite part about that?
Well, it's just great, being able to help, in a sense, mold students,
mm-hmm.
To become great individuals in this sphere, and then seeing them, grow and show talent, and then make contributions of their own in this field, and so I think that's one of the great things, to just be able to see that,
yeah,
and. We can share quite a lot of success stories now, thanks in part to the support of the NASA program, but also some of the, I would say, the seeds that we set up years earlier,
mm-hmm.
Thanks also to collaboration with some of the other talented professors.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit of a team effort in helping to create an engine like this to then see yeah. students pass through.
That's one of the great things about teaching is launching them, no pun intended, but launching them into their careers and what you see many years later. Well, you're listening to Jump in Tucson. This is Ed Ackerley. This is the Monday edition, the Wonder Program. We're highlighting great things happening at the University of Arizona, sponsored in part by Michael Kass for Afalua Lowell Companies. We'll be back in just a minute, and we'll talk about our unique program that Dr. Thenga and his students have put together. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is Ed Ackerley, your host. With me co-hosting on this Monday morning is Roman Campuzano.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here, Roman. Appreciate all you do for the community. The Monday Wonder Program about the good things happening at the University of Arizona is sponsored in part by Michael Kasser of Halua Aloha Companies. We thank Michael for his continued support of the great things going on at the University of Arizona. Our guest this segment is Dr. Jake Nthenga. He is Associate Professor of Aerospace and Mechanical Engineering. And we just got wrapped up talking about applying education to come up with creative and unique things for the world. And my good friend, University Vice President Pam Scott, tipped me off to this. I'm gonna read this because it's just, to me, it just blows me away. The headline is, Cathedral Termite Mounds Inspire University of Arizona Designed Lunar Structures on the Moon. Obviously, a lunar structure is on the moon. So, what? So tell us about how these students figured out that looking at these termite structures would then translate to creating sandbag buildings on the surface of the moon.
Termites and I would say several other what we call eusocial insects are great engineers. Mm-hmm. You know, they really rival everything that we can do. Probably still can even outmatch us in you know, several things, arguably.
Somebody said that if all the insects in the world were eradicated, that human beings would last about 20, 25, 30 years. But if all the humans left the Earth, the insects would last forever. So I think that's probably true. So,
Yeah, no, the insects are resilient. I mean, insects have actually survived two major extinction events over 400 million years. And that you couldn't say of any other quote-unquote advanced creatures.
Right. And so they are engineers. They've figured out how to live in hostile environments and so forth. And that's exactly probably what was extrapolated from this experience. To think about it, how might they teach us something about living on the moon?
Right. And so particularly with the termites, it's interesting because for folks who have had to deal with termite issues, they're typically surviving in a cool, moist environment, but they've adapted to living in dry, hot deserts, particularly in Australia and Africa. Mm-hmm. And how they've done it is they've helped build these nests that are almost skyscraper-like by our standards, in which they live inside, they grow their own food, they have heating and cooling systems, and they have an entire social hierarchy to help them survive inside these structures. And so they don't have to leave. Mm-hmm. And they can be, you know, sort of self-placed in these structures for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm. And so this was the impetus to then to think, well, how might we take this technology that they have developed, you know, if you want to call it that, or the social structure and the way they've done that, and translate that to what could we do for astronauts on the moon, and how could we develop that same kind of a situation, correct?
That's right, that's right. And here, the conduits, in other words, the agents that would do it, wouldn't necessarily be humans, right, but rather robots. Mm-hmm. And so the robots could serve the place of the, you know, literally the drones in you know, a termite nest or a bee's nest, and be, you know, doing the construction, and then the construction expansion and repairs and those types of tasks. And it ends up that these tasks are going to be dull, dirty, and dangerous on the moon for astronauts. At first, you know, an idea like this was a little bit harder for folks to accept, mm-hmm. in part because robotics wasn't just there yet. That was one factor. The second was, and given, you know, all of the success of Apollo, it was very human-centric pathway to mm-hmm. go until our realization that maybe there are a lot of other dangers lurking and maybe we've got to find a, you know, sort of a more a slightly different path that could still, you know, help propel the human enterprise. Humans are at the front. Humans are going to be doing the most exciting things. That's the science. That's the exploration. But let's get some of these other tasks that are needed to you know, keep them alive and keep them energized through robots.
And so part of this process is to think to the future and think about how technology will advance over the next decade or two, and how robots could help, you know, make this happen. I was curious as I was reading this: are the sandbags from moon dust? Are they making them out of moon dust and putting them into like bricks and making structure from the moon dust? Then
that's correct. Yes, we ideally want to be able to use all of the local lunar resources to do the construction. Mm-hmm. But there's going to be variability, almost as much variability as this, it's on Earth. Mm-hmm. And so to first build that structure, to achieve that hardness, to achieve that reliability is no joke. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to have to do some trial and error. Short of that, we asked, what is a method that you could do, even with variable lunar conditions, dust, let's just say it's mixed with pebbles or rocks, can you get started with construction? And so that's where the lunar sandbag idea really takes off, just because of how versatile it is. And literally anybody can do it.
Right, right. And we're talking that maybe people won't do it, but actually a robot will get out and do that and go pick up the moon dust, put it into a bag, bring it over and stack it up on a wall, and we're going to build a little city out of this.
Wow.
And over the course of a decade or so, we might build a pretty significant infrastructure and model it after what the termites are doing in South America and other places.
And I should add, the lunar dust has some resemblance to sort of beach sand here mm-hmm. on Earth. It's the same composition, titanium oxide, but it's got all the properties of crushed glass.
Mm.
And so that's nasty stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Apollo days, the astronauts were touching and feeling it for the very first time, of course. And it started getting inside their suits. And then so the last days, they were starting to itch from inside out mm-hmm. from these things.
Fiberglass kind of stuff.
So right. Fiberglass kind of stuff.
Wow.
And so that really put put limitations on what you
right.
could really do. And so hence, that was one of the thrust for going for robotics. Trying to encapsulate them with a bag.
Yeah, what a fascinating concept, a fascinating idea to use robots to build, I don't know about you, Roman, but I wouldn't have thought of that in a million years. So that's amazing.
Yes. Yeah. I'm actually very, very thankful to be a part of this conversation right now. I didn't know this was something that was happening. It's well into its process.
It's amazing. So hopefully you'll stay at the U of A for some time and mentor some young people into this. So maybe you could see this to fruition down the line sometime, maybe within the next decade. There might be some experimental robots that go up there and try and give this a shot as they're doing other work on the moon and trying to get make the moon the spaceport, if you will, for future exploration of the solar system and beyond. So... Well, Dr. Jenkin, thank you for being here. He's an associate professor of aerospace and mechanical engineering and doing great things with students at the University of Arizona. We love that. We love what you're doing with students. Tomorrow, General Ted Maxwell will be here. Wednesday, Grant Kruger. Thursday, Tom Moulton. And I'll be back on Friday with some business success stories. Matter of fact, I think I'm actually going to be here Wednesday, too, as I recall. So I think I'll be here Wednesday. If you'd like to be interviewed on Jump in Tucson on our Friday show, let us know. Look at our website, jumpintucson.com. This is Tucson's only live local news talk station, KVOI, 1030 AM, The Voice. Thanks for listening to Jump in Tucson, and I'll see you Wednesday and Friday as we continue on down the week.